From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
Within a reasonable period of time, that the Navy will find another place to practice.
The announcement leaves me no alternative but to continue the procedures that have taken, I'm taking in the name of the people of Puerto Rico to make their will known. The case in D.C., the federal court will continue. The health studies will...
The Puerto Rican governor says the bombing of Vieques cannot go on for another 2 years after President Bush says the Navy will pull out in 2003. An Arizona sheriff broadcast jail scenes over the internet, like police officers frisking female prisoners in front of male holding cells. Porn sites are having a field day. And 10,000 protesters greet President Bush in Sweden. All that and more coming up on Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. A fight broke out between hundreds of protesters and riot police today in Gothenburg, Sweden, as a two-day European Union summit got underway. Protesters began marching toward the summit venue after a morning rally on the town's central square, but were blocked by riot police backed by mounted troops. Some 25,000 protesters converged on the city of Gothenburg this week, welcoming President Bush's visit to the European Union gathering with demonstrations. Warsaw is a city under siege today as hundreds of police with clubs are out in the streets to protect President George W. Bush. Despite generally warm sentiment towards Washington and Warsaw, anti-globalization protesters have vowed to greet the U.S. president with a cream pie in the face and have already blanketed the city center with Bush Stop and Bush Wanted placards. Polish security agents held a training session earlier this week to practice protecting high-ranking officials from objects thrown by protesters, a favorite tactic of local activists who managed to hit former President Bill Clinton with an egg during his visit last month. During a simulated attack with tomatoes on Tuesday, guards leapt to catch the projectiles while others created an anti-missile shield over the intended target with an umbrella. A coalition of Polish leftist, green, and anti-globalization groups plan to stage at least two demonstrations against Bush today, but pledge the protests would be peaceful. This news from Colombia. Investigators want to subpoena three U.S. civilians who allegedly helped pinpoint targets from a plane for a Colombian Air Force crew that stands accused of killing 17 villagers. An official who spoke on condition of anonymity said yesterday that Colombia's Attorney General's office wants the three, all former employees of AirScan International, Inc. of Rockledge, Florida, to testify in a civil disciplinary investigation of the deaths in the eastern town of Santo Domingo on December 13, 1998. The villagers were killed by a bomb allegedly dropped from a Colombian Air Force helicopter, but investigators have been unable to serve the subpoenas because the Americans have since left Colombia. The official said the Attorney General's office has requested assistance from the U.S. Embassy. The embassy says it does not comment on ongoing investigations. This news from Algeria. Police fired water cannons and tear gas at protesters yesterday as hundreds of thousands of people marched on Algeria's presidential palace, demanding greater democracy and denouncing unrest. Two people died and more than 400 were wounded in the turmoil. Ethnic Berbers organized the mass protest against discrimination. It was joined by opposition parties demanding greater freedom. Hospital officials said that between 400 and 500 people were injured in the demonstrations. A government official said the two dead were journalists, a woman with an Arab language weekly, and the other man who were hit by a bus fleeing a depot that had been set on fire. Even as the Bush administration cites a lack of refineries as a cause of energy shortages, oil industry documents show that 5 years ago, companies were looking for ways to cut refinery output to raise profits. The internal memos involving several major oil companies were released yesterday by Oregon Democratic Senator Ron Wyden, whose office obtained them from a whistleblower. He said the materials did not necessarily reflect any illegal activities, but said some of them, quote, sure look very anti-competitive. Tight gasoline supplies have been cited repeatedly by the industry and the White House as a primary reason for soaring gasoline prices this year. Cold War-era defense workers and their families are hearing presentations from the U.S. Department of Labor about compensation that may be available for people sickened by dangerous raw materials. A program approved last year provides workers who contracted radiation-related cancer, beryllium disease, or chronic silicosis with a $150,000 lump sum payment. If the workers died, the payment could go to relatives. The presentations in Hartford, Connecticut, which began yesterday, and also in Washington State, are expected to continue for about 6 weeks. Representatives plan to visit 30 cities in 19 states. Between 650 and 750,000 workers nationwide may have been exposed to radiation and the toxic materials beryllium and silica while working in highly classified areas of national defense. This from Louisiana. Legislation reducing the severity of some drug sentences and doing away with mandatory jail time for many nonviolent criminals won final approval in the House. The bill, approved Wednesday, now goes to Louisiana Governor Mike Foster, who's praised it as a way to help more prisoners achieve rehabilitation while saving $60 million a year in prison costs. And this from Alabama, under court order to move state prisoners out of crowded county jails. Governor Don Siegelman yesterday released an $8 million plan that would add 250 state prison cells and create work programs for nonviolent offenders. Siegelman's plan came a day after he announced he would be unable to meet Monday's court-imposed deadline to accept the nearly 2,000 state prisoners who've been held in county jails for more than 30 days. An additional 1,300 prisoners have been in county lockups for less than 30 days. Many of them are sleeping on tables and floors. There was no last-minute reprieve for a schizophrenic killer on his third trip to the death house in Ohio. Jay Scott, whose life was twice spared by court minutes before he was to be put to death, was executed. On Wednesday, the Supreme Court refused to hear his appeals, and Ohio Governor Bob Taft said he wouldn't grant Scott clemency.
Your name is Big Brother. You say that you're watching me on the telly. See me go nowhere. Your name is Big Brother. You say that you're tired of me protesting. Children dying every day. My name is nobody, but I can't wait to see your face inside my door. Oh.
Stevie Wonder from his classic CD, Talking Book, Big Brother. Later in the program, we'll be talking about video cams in prisons. But for now, thousands of flag-waving demonstrators took to the streets of Gothenburg, Sweden, yesterday to protest President Bush's withdrawal from the Kyoto Protocol on global warming, his plans to build a Star Wars weapon system, and the U.S. death penalty. It was the largest protest Bush encountered yet on his European tour, but he saw little of it. The conference venue was sealed off behind double rows of six-foot-high metal fences. Police in full riot gear patrolled the streets, and helicopters flew overhead. In the afternoon, riot police surrounded and blockaded a high school where hundreds of protesters were staying, keeping them from joining the protests outside for several hours. In the resulting clashes with police, more than 200 people were arrested. On the other side of the fence, President Bush sparred with European leaders over climate change, refusing to budge in his opposition to the Kyoto Protocol on global warming. We're joined on the phone right now by Ellen Sundberg, who is a media spokesperson for ATTAC, group in Sweden. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Hello, thank you.
It's good to have you with us. Describe the scene in Gothenburg.
I would say yesterday there was a lot of peaceful process demonstrations, one with over 10,000 people, and we're very happy so many people came here. Sadly, the police acted very strange in the morning, and they surrounded a school where people were living, and everybody in there, a lot of different groups and different people that we just put there to sleep, they were surrounded and couldn't come out.
What has been the reaction of your prime minister?
Our prime minister hasn't said anything. He didn't go out. He hasn't told us anything about what happened. He just says we can't say anything about the police work.
He did, though, have interesting anti-capitalist things to say leading up to President Bush's visit. Can you talk about who he is and what he stands for?
He's a social democrat, I suppose you know, and he's a good person in a lot of ways. I still think he's been... He don't make... From our view, he's not enough hard on George Bush and the things he's done in this country, to his country and others. I think he should have been more clear when it comes to the Kyoto Protocol, and I think he should have put more pressure, not being so happy about having Mr. Bush in our country.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about your stances on the three major issues of the protests, on the Kyoto Protocol, on missile defense? Specifically, what are the proposals of the demonstrators, as well as, of course, the death penalty?
Yes, of course. What about the Kyoto Protocol? There was a lot of green groups, Friends of the Earth, and a lot of others. And I think that the thing they wanted to say more than anything is that even if President Bush doesn't sign the Kyoto Protocol, I think the EU should still go on with it. About the metal defense, there were people speaking about that, and that we think that George Bush's way of handling the conflicts in the world is not a good way. And when it comes to
the death penalty?
When it comes to the death penalty, we didn't have very much of that kind of organizations, but I think in that case, the Swedish government agrees with all of us that this is we're not able to tolerate this.
And missile defense?
The missile defense, you should really cut that down. But when it comes to attacks questions, I mean, we're more into what he's doing with the WTO and the trade policy that the U.S. is having now.
Again, we're talking to Ellen Sundberg, who is a media spokesperson for ATTAC, which is a Swedish group, part of the 10,000-person mobilization against President Bush's visit. You've had some creative tactics in protesting President Bush, like letting the man speak for himself.
Yeah, that's true. We had a doll, a big head, like a beast of Mr. President. And that was only saying all the foolish things I think we all know he usually says. It was a great success.
Finally, on the issue of the anti-corporate globalization message of the protesters, can you talk about some of your proposals, some of the suggestions of protesters of how to deal with globalization, like an international tax?
For my organization and a lot of others, the big thing is that the globalization is here. We can't do anything against globalization. People meet each other from different countries, and that's good. The thing is that the globalization we see now is almost purely economical, and in that way, there's almost only companies that have the power over what is happening in the globalization. I mean, we have not seen that people can move more over the borders. We're not able to see a fair and just and democratic way of globalization, and that's what we're fighting for.
You are also there for the European Union meetings. What is the relationship? How do you see the European Union positioned in relation to President Bush's United States?
I think that European leaders are not hard enough against Mr. Bush when it comes to a lot of things. They're receiving him here in Gothenburg with a lot of respect and saying, oh, hello, very welcome, Mr. Bush, despite the policy that he is running in the U.S. And we think they should criticize him more. And when they choose to be a little more silent, we wanted to do a demonstration which was called Bush Not Welcome, to give the American president the seeming he really deserves.
Where are you standing now, Ellen Sundberg?
Right now I'm in our headquarters, where I work.
In Gothenburg. Well, I want to thank you very much for being with us, Ellen Sundberg, one of, well, thousands of protesters who greeted President Bush when he came to Sweden, now in Warsaw, Poland, and headed to Slovenia for his first European trip. You are listening to Democracy Now!
Your name is Big Brother. You say that you're watching me on the telly.
Big Brother today on Democracy Now! As we look at video cameras today in jail cells. Picture a computer screen broadcasting the following images. A prisoner sleeping on a concrete floor or sitting bound in a restraint chair. Police officers frisking female prisoners in front of male holding cells while male prisoners press up against the windows for a better view. Police officers strip searching prisoners, female prisoners using the toilet. You might think that these are some of the many images that prison security guards see every day, or perhaps human rights advocates see such images when investigating prison conditions. Actually, these are live images of real people in real prisons, and they're available to anyone at the click of a mouse. Last July, the controversial Phoenix, Arizona sheriff, Joe Arpaio, introduced the world's first live internet broadcast from inside a jail. Cameras provide footage from holding and searching cells of Phoenix's Maricopa County Jail. The sheriff calls the project educational because kids could tune in and see what it's like to be in jail. The sheriff's website got so many hits after its unveiling that he was approached by the internet company Crime.com, which now handles the webcasts. Pornography sites now link to the site. And prisoners and prisoners' rights advocates aren't happy. The prisoners and detainees, these are people who've been arrested but not yet tried, are not asked or even told that they're being filmed and broadcast on the internet. 3 weeks ago, a retired lower court judge, Donna Leon Hamm, sued Maricopa County and Sheriff Arpaio, charging that they're violating detainees' basic privacy rights. We're joined on the phone right now by the sheriff of Maricopa County, Joe Arpaio. Can you explain why you've decided to go with jail cams?
Well, most of what you're reading is false anyway. The retired judge was a pro tem who met a person in jail to kill two people and married him. But I'm not going to get into her and her lawsuit. Let me tell you the reason why we started this program was, first of all, that so-called retired judge was the first one, along with civil liberties and other people, to accuse my officers of killing people in jail. And one person did die in that area several years ago. So I said, hey, let's open it up. Let the world be our jury. Let them see what we do. And that's why I put the webcam in that intake section. Number two, educational. Maybe the kids can tune in and see what it's like in a criminal justice system when you're arrested, what happens to you when you are booked into the jail system. And number three, it might act as a deterrence for those arrested for picking up prostitutes or driving drunk and all that type of thing. Maybe they would not want to wave to their wives on a webcam. So that's three reasons why we did this, because we have nothing to hide. You can tune in right now, and if you have any problems or any complaints, let us know. So I should be receiving the award of the year by the Civil Liberties Union for opening up my jail and letting them and everybody else see what we're doing. And by the way, there is no toilet. You can't even see the toilet. There's a 4-foot wall. Everybody's talking about females on the toilet. Nobody even knows the color of the toilet because they can't see it.
Do the prisoners know they're being filmed and broadcast?
We have a on the walls. We have in Spanish and English, telling them they're on video camera and so on.
Well, we have to break for stations to identify themselves, but when we come back, we'll resume with Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio, and we'll be joined by some other people as well. Stay with us. You're listening to Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. I'm Amy Goodman. We're joined on the telephone right now from Maricopa County, Arizona, by Sheriff Joe Arpaio. We also have online with us Donna Leon Hamm, the executive director of the Middle Ground Prison Reform, the retired lower court judge who has brought suit on behalf of a number of prisoners at the sheriff's jail around the issue of the jail cam, the world's first live internet broadcast from inside a jail. Why have you brought the suit?
Well, for a number of reasons. The sheriff lists the three reasons that he feels he is justified in putting the images up on the webcam, and I would simply say that none of those reasons are included in his job description. He is not mandated to do education or deterrence or anything of the sort. The sheriff, by law in Arizona, is simply a highly paid and highly budgeted custodian of pretrial detainees and of sentenced prisoners who receive sentences for less than 1 year. The sign that he talks about, which notifies people about videotaping, is in fact a sign which says that they can be video or audio taped, but obviously most prisoners believe that to be for security reasons, and that is not unusual in any correctional facility to have videotaping going on. But there is no notification that they are up on a World Wide Web, and there's quite a difference. No permission is requested of any prisoner, nor is any authorization given by any prisoner that we've talked to. And I would say to you that it is particularly disturbing to hear the sheriff so callous and so unconcerned about the privacy rights of persons. The toilet is behind a 3 or 4 foot wall, but clearly the images that we can see and which we have downloaded for permanency and for court exhibits include people which are clearly using the toilet. And there is Arizona law which says that a person can only film in a correctional facility in a toilet area or a room where toileting is taking place for security reasons. There's absolutely no way that Joe Arpaio can justify that his webcams are being used for security purposes.
Sheriff Arpaio?
Well, I'm not going to respond to her because we'll see her in court. I didn't realize that you were going to have a court discussion here. But we'll see her in court. I'm not going to comment any further about her comments because, once again, she has filed a law, or she has a free attorney, has filed a lawsuit. We have never had any problems with this website from any complaint except one guy in Belfast, Ireland, that she hopped on. And, by the way, she's worried about all these images, but she's the one that gave these so-called images out to the whole world to see at a big press conference. I'm a little confused about her problem. I'm not going to comment any further about this lawsuit. I gave you the rationale of why this web was set up, and by the way, it's still in operation, and it will continue to be in operation.
Donna Leon.
Amy, when we distributed the pictures and made them available for the media, we were kind enough and lawful enough to cover the faces of the persons that we that were being imaged, and the sheriff has not done that. And secondly, I would say to you that we should be discussing this, and the fact that an attorney has come forward who feels that this is such an important issue, constitutional issue, that he's willing to represent the thousands of people. We estimate there are between 55,000 and 90,000 people who've been affected by the sheriff's illegal activities.
Well, that's a serious and slanderous allegation, just like she called me a child pornographer, but that's another issue I'll be developing. But this is not true, what she's saying. We will see her in court. We have it in court. It's gone into the federal court. We removed it from the state court. And we'll see what the judge says in the future. But it's still there. It will continue to be there, regardless of all the slanderous allegations. And I think it's a great program. And I'm not just a jailer. I'm the chief law enforcement officer here. We just solved a very vicious murder of an 8-year-old girl. And so just calling me a jailer is ridiculous. She knows better than that, and we won't get into my mandated duties.
Let me ask you something, Sheriff Arpaio. There have been a number of porn sites that have now linked to crime.com. One bondage site encourages viewers to, quote, see those cons abused, while another dared spectators to witness a human zoo in, quote, one of the most sordid American prisons. By the way, I'm reading from a Village Voice piece, a very interesting piece that was written by Heather Haddon in last week's Village Voice. What's your response to the porn sites linking up with your jail cam?
Well, I'm not for porn sites. If you dial whitehouse.org or com, what do you think you're going to get? You're going to get a porn site, whitehouse. I'm not sure if it's com or org. But you're going to get a porn site. So they hook up to these. I'm not an expert in computers, by the way, but you can hook. Everybody can hook up to anyone else's website. So that is a problem.
If the sheriff were not providing these images out on the World Wide Web, they would not be available to any sites at all. And so the sheriff cannot simply say he has no responsibility for where these pictures land. If he were not providing the images in the first place, there would not be an opportunity for any site, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, to pick up and use these images, which are the private property rights. A person has a constitutional right to privacy, and he has a constitutional right to his property, and his image is his property.
Not in
and
the
for the
jail
same
or
reason
prison.
That these cop watch shows
he
are required
to
pick pull
that.
Out the... the faces of people that they use, even in the public when they're arresting them, they're using these cop shows and the images on them for commercial purposes. And the sheriff, while he claims, and we will, of course, discover this in court, while he claims he's not making any money from the crime.com website, indeed he is providing the images to crime.com, which is a for-profit company, and those people are making money from these unauthorized, and in most cases, the images are not even known that they're up there by the people who are providing them, that is, the detainees.
Sheriff Arpaio, do you profit from this jail cam video being on crime.com?
Not one penny. She knows that with all her slanderous remarks she's constantly making to get her name in the paper. She's always hooking on to me the last 3 years. She's a nice lady. I have nothing personally against Donna.
If you go to crime.com, though, they do advertise your book.
Yeah, but wait a minute. There is no book or whatever. I have nothing to do with that. Nothing at all. I didn't even know they were doing that. So that's a commercial, as Donna says. And I have absolutely nothing. I have not profited. In fact, we're saving taxpayers money because they are paying for this webcam.
Once again, Amy, it doesn't matter whether the sheriff himself is making any money or whether Maricopa County is making any money. The images are unauthorized by the people whose images are there. In most cases, they are unknown that their images are even being put up on the web. The plaintiffs that we have talked to, clearly some of them saw the cameras, noticed cameras in the jail, but assumed that they were there for security purposes, which is authorized by law, and we have no difficulty and no expectation that the sheriff would remove legitimate security cameras. But cannot masquerade a security camera as a web camera and not call it and call it anything but surreptitious taping.
Well, I feel sorry for O.J. Simpson that was filmed constantly. He wasn't even booked into jail. And in all the television that comes into the same area and the newspapers flashing pictures all over, these guys and gals had never been convicted. The security cameras, which are the same, by the way, as these cameras are asked for by the news media. They show my officers. They show what people are doing in there. It's constantly on television, constantly. So I can't see the problem with the web versus the television. And you can argue that legally. I can go on and on. But once again, Donna, we'll have to see you in court on this one.
The sheriff is very confused about the difference between the role of news media and invasion of privacy rights.
He
has no mandate in his job description to be a news provider.
Right.
And
well,
he's not providing news.
Well, maybe if you follow your job description, since you're of rights for the inmates, maybe you better teach your inmates for not assaulting each other and causing all the so-called sex problems you're talking about.
Let me ask, on this crime.com site that advertises the video day with Sheriff Joe, with you, Joe Arpaio, is that a videotape that when it's sold you make money off of?
I'm going to say again, I make not one penny. That was done by a student in Utah that works for a politician, or his brother does. And then for some reason, they got in touch with him. I don't even know about it. I know about it now, but I don't make a penny. So these are vicious allegations trying to, because they have nothing else, trying to say I profit from this. It's not true, never been true. I don't make a penny.
Well, let me ask you this question. The Village Voice piece talks about a CBS interview you did where you're quoted as saying, have drawn people, meaning the jail cam broadcasts, have drawn people from Sweden, Britain, and Germany to watch officers snap on rubber gloves and frisk incoming arrestees. And again, these are people who haven't even been tried yet, who might be freed very shortly.
Who said this?
That's a quote of yours.
A rubber glove? I said that? I don't remember ever saying that. If you're going to listen to Ireland, who really, after 9 months in existence, wrote a letter, a blistering, slanderous letter, and Donna Hamm picked up on it and went with it, she didn't have any problem for 9 months all at once when she gets this letter. And she knows what's going on in the jail. That's all she does is monitor all the prisoners in the state prison and jail. So I can't understand what's going on here, but once again, she has the right to do what she feels is correct, and I, as the sheriff, my job description comes from the people of this county, 3 million, who have just reelected me. Even though the cam was up there, I was just reelected with 70% of the vote. So that's my job description, what the people want me to do. I'm elected. I'm not appointed. I don't have job descriptions.
Well, Amy, his job description is written in the law, in the precise law books of Arizona state statutes.
Well, then she doesn't believe the education is in there. Then maybe I better take away my drug rehabilitation programs, the most successful in the United States, and maybe the first high school in the United States. I should take that away from the jail. And I did take the Playboy, Hustler, and Penthouse away 6 years ago, which I'm sure she's not happy with. That went up to the Supreme Court. I did win that case. So maybe I don't take all the education away from the jails because she says it's not in my job description.
As you can see, Amy, the sheriff is adept at turning the subject away from what he's supposed to be talking about. And I would say that, you know, he should be congratulated for attempting to do certain things in the jail which aim toward rehabilitation. But, you know, he talks about how he's never been sued successfully. The out-of-court settlement on the death that he spoke about earlier in this interview resulted in a payment from the Maricopa County insurance coverage that covers his office for $8.5 million. His office has paid out millions of dollars in settlements and lawsuits
That's
against
not
abuses
true.
That have occurred in his jail. He claims that he's not responsible his insurance company had to pay the settlements, but in fact, those redound back to the taxpayers of Maricopa County. So the sheriff is not the altruistic and pristine person that he claims to be. We have a right to challenge him in court. The fact that he was allowed to operate this camera before we sued is simply a matter of collecting the information. It's our understanding that he did not put the women's camera up on the website until approximately January of this year. We became aware of it in April because, quite frankly, we don't have time to sit around and monitor those cameras as some people do, and we became aware of it and acted on it within a couple of weeks after we learned about the abuses.
Sheriff Arpaio.
I don't know. What is this cross-examination radio
station? I wanted to give you a chance to respond
to
what
the
former judge,
Donna Leon. I shouldn't even be talking about this, but she wants to talk about it. She gets more national publicity. But as far as all the lawsuits, you know, what's interesting on that case she's referring to is, by the way, we were clear by the Justice Department and FBI and its insurance company settled against my wishes. But that would have been seen on the Internet. That's why I put the webcam up there to show that we don't do anything wrong. So if that web was operating at that time, you would have seen that instance that she's saying about the $8 million lawsuit.
Well, and what we would have seen is the murder of an inmate in the hallway
strong.
Outside the county jail.
If that was murder,
I think the $8.5 million settlement speaks for itself. Courts and insurance companies don't settle for those amounts unless they know that they're going to lose.
Is that right? Is that right? Why did Justice Department, FBI, for 4 years investigated this and found nothing wrong? So don't call it a murder in that sense.
We are talking about the violation of privacy rights on the web, and that is the issue here. That is the issue that's going to go before the courts. And, in fact, I should tell you, Amy, that we have a number of other issues, and I know that you mentioned them earlier. The sheriff has available on the website a shakedown search of a woman's cell that apparently was staged because it's even advertised as the first shakedown of a woman's cell, which occurred in 4 years. And so we can tell from that obviously if a shakedown is only conducted once every 4 years, it's obviously not for security reasons.
Oh, I'm not even going to comment.
He lines women up against the wall, which happens to be a glass window facing the men's holding cell. The men come up to the window, and they clearly show on the video and on the slideshow making gestures of a sexual nature, making facial hand gestures to these women. And it is just incredible that a government agency would allow this kind of sexual harassment and sexually hostile environment to take place knowingly in a jail and then advertise it on the World Wide Web.
Well, that's, once again, Donna has got her side. I have my side. I'm very comfortable. It's still going, the website. It will continue to go, and she can continue to sue this office and the sheriff's office.
And we are very comfortable allowing the federal district court to make the decision.
I'm not going to talk about this lawsuit. I didn't realize she was going to be on this radio station. I was sandbagged, but you know me. I don't hide from the news media. I thought that this radio station would have had the courtesy to let me know on the other side, especially since there's a lawsuit. But,
I'm sorry if you didn't know, but very briefly.
Oh, you're sorry I didn't know. I think purposely I was not told. But that's all right. I'm not afraid to talk with Donna. We've talked many times on television and that type of thing. But this is a different situation where now there is a lawsuit. I'm trying to be a little careful.
Well, we've appreciated having you on the past, Sheriff. You are a well-known sheriff around the country. The media dubs you the America's toughest sheriff as you take on, get involved, to say the least, in very controversial issues like dressing prisoners in pink underwear,
that's
establishing
right.
male and female chain gangs.
But no lawsuits and all that. This is a different situation. But Donna is, you know, she's pushing this. She has the right to do that. I have nothing against Donahue. And
last question to Donahue. You have interviewed a lot of the people who've come out of the jail and are inside, a lot of the women. Just very briefly, their comments when they learn. How do they learn that they're being broadcast around the world on the Internet?
Well, some of them learned when they heard that we had filed a lawsuit. That was the first time that they knew. Others are told by other prisoners who have seen it covered perhaps on the news and are vaguely aware that these are, in fact, web cameras. Most of the reaction that we get is just utter humiliation. Some of them are angry. In one case, a woman was so disturbed to learn that she was up on the World Wide Web that she cried for 2 days before she could even call me to let me know that she wanted to be a part of the lawsuit. The reactions are just shock and anger that they have been used in this fashion, exploited in this fashion on behalf of the sheriff. You know, the sheriff talks about other people wanting media attention and so forth. This is a sheriff. I mean, if publicity and media attention were a drug, this man is an addict. And
well, she's going around once again.
There is absolutely nothing that,
you know, she gets personal. She knows she has nothing else, so she gets personal. Nice. I said she was a nice lady. I say that because I don't ever like saying derogatory remarks against anybody. But she wants to make this personal, which she's already done in the past, which I have records of, accusing me of certain things, which are slanderous but not true. That's okay.
Well, you're a public official, Joe.
Yeah,
well,
I don't think you can call anybody a pornographer when you have no proof. I still have my rights. That's part of my job description, to protect myself and the people of this county to know that I'm not a child pornographer, like you said. But that's another situation. This shows the personal, how personal this is.
My exact quote was that you were potentially an international child pornographer if there were, in fact, images of juveniles up on the website. And we believe that the potential exists, at least,
we'll see,
for juveniles to have been mixed in with adults.
Well, this
on the web.
Case is clearly going to go to court, so I thank you very much, both of you, for being with us. Sheriff Joe Arpaio, Sheriff at Maricopa County in Arizona. Donna Leon Hamm, Executive Director of Middle Ground Prison Reform, a retired lower court judge. I want to thank you very much, both, for being with us. When we come back, we're going to talk about Vieques and the president's plan for ending the bombing. Well, not this year or next year, but maybe in the years to come. Stay with us. You're listening to Democracy Now! Free Speech Radio. I'm Amy Goodman. Puerto Ricans are less than optimistic after President George Bush announced the U.S. Navy would stop its bombing of the Puerto Rican island of Vieques by the year 2003. He addressed the issue when he was on Sweden in his European tour. This is President Bush.
And so I appreciate the fact that the Defense Department and the Navy responded and have made the statement loud and clear that within a reasonable period of time that the Navy will find another place to practice.
And this is the response of the Puerto Rican governor, Sila Calderon.
The announcement leaves me no alternative but to continue the procedures that have taken, I'm taking in the name of the people of Puerto Rico to make their will known. The case in D.C., the federal court will continue, the health studies will continue, and the local consultation will take place on July 29th.
Puerto Rico's prisoner, Puerto Rico's governor, Sheila Calderon, as we come out of the prison segment, talking about the bombing of Vieques. A federal appeals court here in New York, meanwhile, actually it's based in Boston, upheld the convictions and sentences of the Reverend Al Sharpton and three prominent New York politicians who were arrested during a demonstration against the bombing. Sharpton was given a 90-day sentence, while the other three were sentenced to 40 days in jail, and they continue to serve those sentences. We're joined right now in the studio by Mario Murillo, who is a well-known WBAI and Pacifica producer who has reported extensively on Puerto Rico. And Seven Stories Press has just come out with one of their open media pamphlet series by Mario called Islands of Resistance, Puerto Rico, Vieques, and U.S. Policy. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Mario.
It's great to be with you, Amy, once again.
Well, these latest comments of President Bush, your reaction?
Well, I think he was playing, there's a number of ways to look at it. One, of course, him playing politics to the Latino vote. After all, that's where it was coming from his political advisor that was making the decisions, more or less, or the advisement to call off the bombing. But after talking to a number of Vieques activists yesterday on the ground in Vieques, including some of the people right there on the front lines getting ready to do more civil disobedience protests next Monday when the bombing continues, and as Sheila Maria Calderon just pointed out in the clip that you played, it is not enough. The Navy and the New York Times echoes the president's or describes the president's announcement yesterday as being a compromise. It says President Bush's compromise plan to halt the Navy's bombing exercises in Puerto Rico, et cetera, et cetera, without recognizing that how is it a compromise when the idea was that the so-called referendum would be a vote that said that they would leave by 2003, whereas the people on Vieques are saying they leave right away. So it's not really a compromise. It's kind of continuing with the same kind of program.
What about the referendum that Governor Calderon is talking about?
Well, it's kind of ironic. President Bush, after making the announcement, he also called and he's pressuring senators in the U.S. Congress to call off the referendum, which is scheduled for November, a referendum which is part of the Clinton-Rosselló so-called agreement that they made in January of 2000 to call off the bombing. And that referendum basically was going to give the Puerto Ricans, namely the Viequenses, two choices. One, that the Navy leave in 2003, which is after all what Bush said they're going to do, or that they continue on Vieques indefinitely with a $90 million payback, supposedly, of development for Vieques. The referendum that the governor called for adds a third option, and that third option is what the people in Vieques have been demanding, and that is that they leave right away. Now, the only ironic, and this is a clear example of what I try to point out in the book and what people in Vieques and other places have been saying, that this referendum in July, which Governor Calderon continues to press for, is non-binding. It's basically a litmus test or a public opinion poll, basically, to show up the president to say that that the Viequenses in Puerto Rico no longer want the Navy there. But once again, this is a symbol of how a direct example of how the colonial control of the island continues. The decision made by President Bush yesterday, the announcement, was made without any consultation, without any words from the people on Puerto Rico, the most affected by this decision.
We're also joined in the studio by Reverend Luis Barrios, a professor of Latin American Studies at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in Manhattan and a columnist with the newspaper El Diario La Prensa. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thank you very much.
This issue of colonialism that Mario is talking about and how Vieques fits into the history of Puerto Rico and the United States. Just an interesting clip of President Bush at the beginning of his comments saying that the Navy would stop bombing in 2003. He actually said this.
These are our friends and neighbors, and they don't want us there.
These are our friends and neighbors, usually reserved for other countries, saying it's a neighboring country. Mm-hmm. A common mistake in the United States, talking about Puerto Rico as not a part of the United States.
Well, we've been saying from the beginning that the issue of Vieques is a more deep issue. For example, Some people want to disconnect Vieques from Puerto Rico. Vieques is Puerto Rico, so it's not possible to disconnect Vieques from Puerto Rico. The other situation is that we've been saying that Vieques is only a symptom, not the problem. The problem is colonialism. This is what we've been saying, that since July 25, 1898, when the U.S. did a military occupation in Puerto Rico, they've been running the show there. They have control, a political, economic, military control of Puerto Rico.
It's interesting that the name of the ships that are coming in, the battalion, I think, is the Theodore Roosevelt battalion.
Yes.
Right now, and you're talking about 1898.
Yes, so it's nothing new. And then the whole concept of militarization, because, yes, this incident that happened with David Sanes when he was killed 2 years ago, but since 1941, that they did the occupation of Vieques, and before that with Culebra, 1975 when we got then out of Culebra, but then the militarization of the whole island of Puerto Rico, not only Vieques, not only Culebra, because you go into Aguadilla, you go into Fajardo, you go into Sabana Seca, you go into Guaynabo, this is the whole militarization going on in Puerto Rico. So we've been saying this is about colonialism, and I think George Bush was very clear when he was trying to describe the relationship between Puerto Rico and the U.S., not having the clear words to use. So he gave a very interesting and a very powerful description of what we understand is colonialism.
Mario Murillo, in your book, Islands of Resistance, Puerto Rico, Vieques, and U.S. Policy, you focus a lot on the U.S. military relationship with Puerto Rico.
Well, I think it should be pointed out that just as the Navy and people like Senator Inhofe and Bob Barr of Georgia, the Republican hawk in the Congress, point out how Vieques is such an essential component of the U.S. military strategy globally, and saying that it's a total violation or threat to the national security interests of the United States if the Navy stops bombing Vieques. These are the same words that Teddy Roosevelt used to use in 1898 and prior to that when he was Secretary of Defense, talking about how significant Cuba and Puerto Rico were to the vital interests of the United States. The same exact arguments, almost verbatim, that we hear now going off about Vieques were used back in 1898 and prior to that, before the U.S. actually intervened in Puerto Rico, always with the intention of it becoming a colony of the United States. Now, this military battle, the struggle over Vieques, it's very important to focus on this idea of getting the Navy out right now. But at the same time, all the focus that's being presented on Vieques is taking away or veering away from the essential role that Puerto Rico is playing, especially in the wake of the withdrawal of forces from Panama in 1999, at the end of 1999, as part of the Carter-Torrijos treaties, where the U.S. SOC South, the Southern Command of the Army component of the Southern Command, was forced to move from Panama to Puerto Rico, and now they are controlling basically the entire counter-drug strategy in the Andean region, in the Caribbean basin, totally being centralized out of Puerto Rico. That's an essential component. So when the United States talks about, well, yeah, okay, now Bush talks about demilitarizing Vieques, I think it's also important to point out that there's an intense militarization all over the island. And in the book, I talk a little bit about what that strategy is in terms of the radar that's being used, in terms of its connection with the many other forces that are operating already on the ground in Ecuador and in parts of Colombia and other parts of the region. And I think it's something that is being, in a sense, ignored, but and I understand why, just like the question of the status in Puerto Rico. Of course, the main thing, the main focus right now is the Navy in Vieques, but I think it's something that, especially people, grassroots movement, activists, anti-militarist, anti-interventionist forces within the United States, and listeners to Democracy Now! Should keep in mind when they talk about Puerto Rico.
We're talking to Mario Murillo, who is a longtime Pacifica WBAI producer, professor of communications at Hofstra University, and has just come out with one of the open media pamphlet series from Seven Stories Press called Islands of Resistance, Puerto Rico, Vieques, and U.S. Policy. Also in the studio with us, Reverend Luis Barrios, professor of Latin American Studies at John Jay College of Criminal Justice. You talked about Culebra. Can you explain what that is?
Well, Culebra is another island next to Vieques, so it's a few islands, what we call Puerto Rico. But then the military component was also there, not only in Vieques, not only in the big island, what we call the rest of Puerto Rico, but then the incident that happened in 1975 that went out of control, that then the U.S. made a decision, according to them, that no, we're going to do this military operation only in Vieques. So they moved all these military operations that they were doing in Culebras and also in Vieques to Vieques. But also the whole control is being in Fajardo. This is where the biggest operation is being in violation of the Trotaleco Treaty, that they also have nuclear weapons, submarine nuclear weapons there in Puerto Rico, which is a violation. So they moved from Culebra into Vieques, and they reactivate Vieques with all these military exercises, not only for the U.S., but also for the OTAN and other countries in Latin America.
Mario, what do you think the bombing of Vieques is going to mean for the status of Puerto Rico, you know, whether it remains a state or it votes for independence or to be a commonwealth?
Well, I think that's an important question that many people who are focused on the struggle to get the Navy out are, for the time being, putting on hold. Sila Maria Calderon, recently in New York for the Puerto Rican Day Parade, she even as much as said that the issue of the status question, the political status of Puerto Rico, is not one of her priorities. She said economic development on the island is. She said she talked about Vieques as being one, talking about strengthening the justice system in Puerto Rico as her priorities. So the governor, the acting governor, who happens to represent the party that supports the Commonwealth status, the current status on the island, is, you know, putting it to a side as if it's not an issue that's relevant. Of course, we should point out that the previous governor, the pro-statehood governor, Pedro Rosselló, he was, for his 8 years in office, that was his main obsession, making Puerto Rico the 51st state, and he was struggling for those 8 years to have a referendum and to solve that problem. So Sila Maria Calderón is putting it on the side. The Vieques supporters and activists who are mobilizing against it are careful not to make it a status question. Of course, we must consider that when somebody's about to put their life on the line, carrying out civil disobedience, cross the line and go into a base that is being bombarded, naturally you're not going to be asking the person next to you whether they support pro-statehood, if they're pro-independence, pro-commonwealth. They're going to be saying, no, we're all against the Navy. So that's one of the reasons clearly why they're not involving that part of that question in their struggle. That's not part of it. But the fact of the matter is that the simple, as I pointed out earlier, the simple fact that it is happening and that the United States has the right and makes takes it upon itself to make the decisions about the future of what's going on in the Navy and in Vieques points to that political limbo which Puerto Rico has been under for 103 years. Just as, for example, just to give you another example, because Vieques is just one manifestation of this colonial status, the Puerto Rican Constitution, which the pro-Commonwealth people say is an example of autonomy, the pro-statehood pro-Commonwealth Constitution of Puerto Rico says that the death penalty is illegal. But because of the federal government and the federal control, they basically null and void, make that null and void. The argument of the death penalty is null and void in Puerto Rico, even though the Puerto Rican Constitution clearly states that it is illegal.
Finally, we only have 30 seconds, but the incarceration of Reverend Al Sharpton and other prominent politicians for their civil disobedience at Vieques. Sharpton got 3 months in jail, which he's serving now, and the other politicians 40 days. What do you think this is going to mean for the movement? We have 10 seconds.
Well, the four of them and also the ones that we have in Puerto Rico already in prison are an inspiration for the movement. So we're going to continue with the civil disobedience, and I'm glad for that.
Well, I want to thank you both for being with us, Reverend Luis Barrios, Professor of Latin American Studies at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York, and Mario, great to be with you again. His book, Islands of Resistance, Puerto Rico, Vieques, and U.S. Policy, it's published by Seven Stories Press. And that does it for the program, Democracy Now!, produced by Chris Abrams and Brad Simpson, Anthony Soler, engineer, Errol May, our technical director. From the embattled studios of WBAI, from the studios of The Band and The Fired, from the studios of You, Our Listeners, I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening.